Hello, and welcome to another episode of the William Branham Historical Research Podcast. I'm your host, John Collins, the author and founder of William Branham Historical Research at william-branham.org. And with me, I have my very special guest, Daryl Carlisle, former member of Christ Gospel Church. Daryl, it's good to have you and to share your story on the podcast. I think before we get too deep, we have to talk about the elephant in the room, and that's the eyesore that is in the picture that I'm looking at. And we're talking about the...
Can we get closer?
Yeah, the UK emblem on your shirt. That's going to offend a lot of people around here. I can say this because I'm a Georgia Bulldogs fan, so I don't have a dog in this fight, but welcome. It's good to have you.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, Georgia just beat us a couple weeks ago, so I appreciate you bringing that up. So no, thank you very much. My wife was on I guess it was about a month or so ago, and it's kind of taken a long time. It's been a crazy journey for the last several years, kind of getting out of this whole thing and just kind of embarking on a new journey, you know, as a couple, much different than how we grew up. And I wasn't born into this, but my mom started going at about the age of five, when I was at five. And then she would take my sister and myself. And so we were essentially, I guess you could say, raised in that. My sister was about two or three or so when we started. And I went, obviously, through high school and ended up meeting Renee at an event, a youth event, when we were in high school. We dated for a year, and then basically when we were out of school, we got married. But we were still in, and we moved to Missouri, and had some really good friends there that I had known in Indiana, where we grew up, where I grew up, and they were living in Missouri, going to Christ Gospel, and I went to visit them, and we really liked the area, and so I went to college there, and that's kind of how we ended up in Missouri. We were there for had both our children there. And still in the church, we're youth pastors, and I know we kind of started on the journey of, you know, everybody's called, right, you know, to be pastors and whatnot. And so we were doing some classes, and it was kind of crazy, the stuff that we were like basically taking her books and then the workbooks, and obviously it cost a lot of money to do this. And so we did that for a bit, and then we had some interesting interactions with the pastor in our classes, because the local pastor would administer the classes. There were three couples, and finally I was like, you know, we got to get out of this, that portion of it. And what kind of got me going on getting out of this was I took a job out, and I was a nurse, and I took a job in industry as a sales rep for a company, and I met some really cool people that were Christians, and they didn't look like me, or I guess, you know, or at least the wives didn't look like, you know, how we looked, but they were obviously were good people. The total opposite of kind of what I had been led to believe that was out there, right? If you step out of the cult. And it really got me thinking, and I had lots of questions along the way. I know Scott was on his podcast released the other day. I knew Scott. We went to a youth camp together, and he kind of got into the nuts and bolts of a lot of the details of, you know, the teachings and whatnot. And a lot of that stuff, like him, I was like, I don't know about this. And throughout college, before I even took that job, I started really thinking about things. And so I had a lot of questions, and then when I took that job and I met some other folks outside of the cult and started to, build other relationships, you know, it just made it a little bit easier because, you know, one time I was out training and I came back and Renee had cut her hair, and that was a big no-no. And I was like, okay, it's on, because now I know she's kind of where I'm at. And it was wild, and, you know, she kind of went through that kind of got it going, because as you know, I'm sure you experienced this, once you do something like that, you're kind of ostracized, you know. So that's kind of her doing, of all the things that happened, that, believe it or not, was kind of what, like the line in the sand, like, okay, we're doing this.
Yeah.
You know, and that was kind of turning out.
You know, what's really odd about that is whenever I was in it, and I was of the same mindset, right? I believed that it was wrong for women to cut their hair. I had not studied all of the things that I have studied now and understand the passages. But whenever I was in it and somebody would do something like that, whether it was the hair or wearing something, usually it was directed at the women, but there were a handful of rules that the men had. And when they would break them, I never looked at people like that and ostracized them. I was of the mindset that Christ came to save the sinners, and if somebody stumbles and falls, you pick them back up. That was my mindset when I was in it. But at the same time, when I left, I knew that a vast majority of people would be exactly like that. They'll cut you off. It's really weird. It's like if you're not part of the group, we're going to sever ties with you altogether, and you're no longer even human to us. That's really how it feels in these groups.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, she went, I'm doing some training. And actually, the funny thing is that it was, I'm thinking, I got back from a trip and I was asleep, and I remember she came into this apartment because we were building a house, and she woke me up and out of a dead sleep, and her hair was cut, but it wasn't when I went to bed. And I was like, oh my God, like get out of here. I didn't know who it was, right? And it was the craziest thing. And so then I went to another training class, right? And in St. Paul, Minnesota, right? I'm gone for a week at a time. And she had a meltdown, and she had visited another church, and it was weird to her, as everything was to us at that time, other than, you know, Christ's gospel. And so she ended up going back on the next Sunday that I was gone, and people wouldn't even talk to her, and because she had cut her hair. And, you know, and then that kind of was a good thing for her to experience that. Because maybe they would have, if I would have been there, maybe they would have come up to me and made conversation with me. And then maybe we'd have felt like, okay, well, you know, we messed up, right? We're coming back, right? But it wasn't. That was very hurtful to her. And also, obviously, to me, too. But after that, you know, that was it. We were done. And one of the things, like, for me was that, we're kind of going through this thing now. And I'll say this part because I'll go back. This deconstruction, right, and it's a tough and painful thing, because I've heard you talk about it. You realize that, oh my goodness, I was so blind. Like, how could I mean, it was embarrassing. I think it was 27 or 28 when we left, 27 maybe. And it was like, but we didn't just, you know, now that we're fully deconstructing now, right, and we're on a much different journey. But at that moment in time, we couldn't just leave. We went to something that was a little less crazy, I guess you could say. And it was an Assembly of God church, and it was okay. The people were very nice. I love the pastor, and I've heard you say it a lot. Not all these pastors are meaning to be harmful to us, right, or to people. There are a lot of good ones out there, but what some of these folks, what they teach and what they believe, and it's just what they believe, is very hurtful and harmful. And so this was less, it was charismatic, but less crazy, I guess you could say. And it was like a step down, right? And then we moved, and we ended up in another church, another amazing pastor, small church. We ended up in North Dakota, transferred for work. And this again, you know, we're going through this journey of like, okay, you know, we're not in a cult anymore. We're not in a cult. And we ended up at a church that was affiliated with Kenneth Copeland.
Oh, wow.
And Hagen. Yeah. I mean, that guy's net worth was rumored to be like $750 million, you know, a few years ago, which I don't, that's probably not true, but it's probably not far off. And it was like, I don't, and one of the things that I've learned is like, so many of us, when we get out of this, if we don't really deconstruct and really tear this thing down, we ended up in another situation very similar to the one we left. And we left North Dakota, and we ended up in another assembly, and there was some crazy stuff that went on there. And we finally got out of there, but it took us 5 years. And it's and I don't know how your journey's been, but I mean, and I'd love to hear kind of like your process, but it was, again, it's like, you know, just it felt like we were just getting a little further away, but we're still in something kind of crazy. And it's just, you know, it's hard. It's so hard to just walk away,
yeah,
you know, all at once.
It's really common. People see, the problem is we had such a false foundation that literally I could talk to somebody, to another Christian, about a passage from the Bible, and he's talking about the same passage that I am, and we both think we're talking about the same thing, but my head is off in left field because we had such a wrong foundation that even the text of the passages had a different meaning to us. And I'll never forget the moment in which I read the Bible cover to cover, just trying to wash all this out of my head. One day it just suddenly clicked. This is a set of books. The Bible is actually a library. It's not a book. It's a library. It's a set of books. Each book has different genres. You've got history books. You've got the law. You've got the prophets. You've got the scrolls. You've got the letters from Paul. And suddenly it just clicked. You read it in the way that it's written. You don't read it through what some other person has said or through some other book. And so my journey out was similar. We didn't go to the extreme of you know, choosing another Pentecostal church, but the church that we chose after, there are things that I consider healthy about it, and there are things that I consider very unhealthy about it, and very, some of them very problematic. After we left and we started discovering, I heard the gospel for the first time in that church. I'd never heard it in the message. And yet, at the same time, there were things that were fundamentally, in my opinion, fundamentally in sync with what we had left in this church. And I realized, I've got to get my family out of here, because if there's that level of destruction that we came from, and then there's this little tiny level of destruction in this new place, what will it grow to? And I was really concerned about this. So I went to another church, and I'm not going to tell you where I landed, because I try to avoid, yeah, you know, where my journey's personal. I try to avoid that. But
yeah.
The gist of it is, we were taught something that was so incredibly false that even our understanding of the Bible itself was wrong. We were taught, basically, if you really think about it, you're taught at almost like a elementary kindergarten level understanding of what the Bible is, rather than what it says. And once you grow to an adult, if you're reading a book, well, you're going to want to know more about the book. You want to know more about the culture and the people and what does the book say. And so I went down paths of study that most people won't, but I got into the studies of text criticism, which is basically how do we know the text is accurate? Out of all of these families of text, how do they determine which, you know, what families of the text are correct and why? I wanted to know how the Bible was formed, and then church history in general. I wanted to know all of it. And so I started at the very beginning. I'm reading all of the early church fathers, everything I could get my hands on. I'm reading some fascinating old stories, and you find out some of those guys were nuts, but some of them are respected in the church.
Yeah.
But you have to remember, they too came out of cults. They came out of the, you know, the cults of Dionysus, the cults of Zeus, whatever, you know. So these men came out of cults, and they started forming what was their thoughts about Christianity. And over time, it was refined into a way in which, you know, what we have today. The interesting part that I'm building up to with all of this is the movements like the ones that we came out of takes it in the reverse direction. Instead of refining it and growing to a better understanding of God, they want to dumb you down so they can control you.
No, and this is kind of where I've come to, and this is kind of the thing that I'm really where I'm at now, and Renee's been a couple months or 6-8 months behind me, because I didn't dig in like you did, but I have dug in and looked at all this, because I'm like, okay, I look around, I did a little bit of research. I was astounded that there are 46,000 different sects of the Christianity. 46,000. And they all think they're right, obviously. Everyone I've been to, the handful I've been to. And I also came across a really cool, interesting thing. There's 10,000 cults in the U.S., okay? So you think about a lot of those, they're not all Christian cults, but most of them are. So you take those 46,000, those 10,000, a lot of them are kind of commingling, right? And it's like, I looked at all this and I'm like, what have we done, right? As a nation, in America, it just seems like a lot of this stuff is just running rampant. And I call it the triad, sex, money, and power. I feel like that most all of these have at least one or two, and typically all three. It's become more of like a business, and it's not about people. It's, you know, I was reading, this is another crazy number. Last year, it was estimated $74 billion the church brought in.
Wow.
I looked up how much the percentage that they give to charity, 2-8% on average. And most of those charities are administered by that church. And I'm sitting here like, what are we doing? Like, why have we built this machine? And again, to your point, it's control. Like they dumb it down, like you say. They control this, and people just tell me what to do. Tell me what to think. Tell me what to say, and I'll do it. I feel more comfortable, doing that. And I felt like for me that, and I think I've heard you say some of this. I've listened to a lot of your stuff lately in the last 6 months or so. You talk about the onion and all that, as far as peeling back all these pieces, layers of the onion. And I felt like I had to get to the very middle, and to where I was somewhere between agnostic and almost atheist. Not that, I just had to, because I want to say, you know what, I need to find out for myself, like what do I believe? Like, what does all of this mean to me? And I did come back to my faith, but not to someone else's, I guess you could say, right? And if that makes any sense to you.
Absolutely. I've had deep discussions with men of the faith, ministers, who try to change the way in which I do things, because I allow anybody to talk. I don't care who you are. I don't care what you believe or don't. It's your story, and you've gone through it. I've gone through it. And what they were trying to push on me was the notion that, John, you can't let them deconstruct. They have to hold on to Christianity. Otherwise, they'll go atheist, and then they'll be the bad guys. I mean, that was the gist of what they're trying to say. But you don't really understand. When you have such a false foundation as this, you can't try to put something else on top of it. It's like if you got it building a house and you suddenly realize there's quicksand underneath, you don't just take part of the house down, you take it all the way down and build a strong foundation that you can build up with it. And when you're in these types of groups, the only thing that you can do is start to tear down the God that you were trained to believe. And in a lot of cases, you find out this is a false God. This is not the God of the Bible. So in effect, somebody who's deconstructing, I hate to say it, because it is the most painful thing you have ever done. You literally have to take it all the way down to, okay, is there a God? Who made the universe? How does this place exist? And you go down to the basic questions. What's interesting about this is those basic questions are literally how religion came to be in the first place. Man wanted to connect with gods, right? So you're in essence, you're going back to the beginning, but like you said, you're building up things that you know and you can prove. Here's the Bible. What does it say? It's that simple.
No, it is. And I look at where things are now, and you know, we currently aren't going anywhere. And I really respect people. And any choice when you get down and you boil it down and you tear it apart, if you land in as an atheist or agnostic, I respect you. I because if you went through what I went through, I can understand. And I'm not gonna. And at the same point, I see people that are deconstructing and they don't know it, and they're kind of holding like same thing with me. And they're still talking the same language. They're still saying the same kind of things, but they're kind of pulling away. And I can't cast judgment on them because I'm like, hey, what are you thinking, man? Don't you see this? Well, it took me a lot of years. So you have to respect these folks, you know. Even if they, again, it's like I respect another religion. You know, it's the same thing.
Yeah. Well, it comes down to it's a personal journey for each person. And what I describe with the deconstruction process, my foundation was built because of the indoctrination. Well, indoctrination works differently from person to person, because in the way that they indoctrinate you using the power of suggestion, usually that's what it is, the suggestion combines with your own thoughts and your own feelings. So what I feel and what I think and how that merges with my brain doesn't merge in the same way with another person, which is interesting because that's how it causes all these splinter groups. They all have different notions, and they'll say, but the cult leader said exactly what I believe. And then they realize that, no, it's the power of suggestion. It works differently. And, you know, I'm the same way, that the people have to go on their own journey, and where they are now, it's the old saying, walk a mile in my shoes, right? Until you know what somebody has been through, you can't really talk about it.
Yeah, no, you can't. And, you know, it's one of the hardest things. There's a couple different podcasts I listen to because there's a lot of folks that have went through. And like there's and I don't agree with everything, but I find myself understanding a lot of what they what's it called, the new evangelicals. It's one of the ones that I've listened to because I understand, because they came from a lot of the charismatic movement, kind of where I came out of. And they do a really good job of respecting people as far as, like, you know, like where they're at in this whole thing and not being judgmental towards them. But one of the things, the reason why I brought him up is the guy that Tim or something like that, he always said it was the hardest thing he ever did in his life. And people are like, well, you did this because you don't want to follow the rules. And he's like, man, I didn't want to lose all my friends. I didn't want to lose my job. I didn't want to lose my whole social a French structure. Like, he lost it all. And I feel like the blessing in all this is we moved a lot, so we had to build friendships, because, you know, I'm pretty outgoing, and so I made lots of friends. And I didn't hey, where do you go to church, you know? I just hey, I like that, they're nice people, let's be friends with them. And so when we were going through this, the hardest parts of it, we were actually moving here, you know, and meeting other people outside of the church and people in the church. So I didn't lose everything like some people do, because if you deconstruct and you live in your own town, you might lose everybody.
Oh yeah,
your family and everything. And I told my wife the other day, I said, I rather, as crazy as it sounds, I rather you break this whole thing down and even end up agnostic or atheist, because it might not, who knows how long or whatever, rather than to live in that lie, because I know that that's wrong. I know it's good. You're going to get hurt. You're going to get used and abused. And I mean, the alternative has to be better. And who knows where you'll end up? Because once you start it all over, you're going to build something back.
Yeah.
Right? Eventually. And I think that, you know, there's a good chance a lot of people will come back to their faith, and you don't have to be in a building. I mean, we've all been told that our whole lives, you know, that's one of the things, like, of, you know, keeping us in, like little sheep, right, to keep feeding the machine, and being comfortable with all that. That's hard to do, but anyway, I know I feel like I'm rambling, but it's a hard thing to walk through and process, and without losing your mind, you know, or at least feeling like you are losing your mind. And that's kind of where what we've been going through, as you know, lately. in that. But I feel like we're kind of coming out on the other side and building something more healthy. And now I've kind of taken another step, like doing something like this today. I love what you do, and there's others like you that I feel like people really need to dig in and listen to what you have to say, because you've done so much work and so you know so much about this, and people need to have an open mind and just really just sit and listen and not don't think about it, just listen and then be honest with yourself. And because I know there was someone left a comment about on Renee's pod, that, and I don't care. People, again, I respect everybody and where they are. You're not going to hurt my feelings. And said, you know, you're rambling on, you have a lot to do about nothing, and that it's sour grapes. And I responded very kindly, and I said, the fact you're here tells me you're listening to this. You're looking. Just be honest with yourself. It's hard. It's not easy. Just let yourself go through the process, and don't be hard on yourself, because it's going to be scary. But let yourself listen and learn from folks and their experiences. And so, that's just kind of where we are right now in this whole process. So,
well, it's both a difficult place to be and a good place to be, because the deconstruction, I'm not going to lie, it's difficult. And when somebody starts working with me, either offline or in the support groups, I'd never try to make it sound better than it is. This will be the hardest thing that you've ever gone through. But if you can make it through to the other side, it will also be the most empowering thing that you've ever gone through. I have a friend who is semi-famous in this area. I don't know if famous is the right word, but he's built a pretty good name for himself in Christianity in this area. And he was part of the Branham movement, the message. And for years and years and years, he had tore down part way and then tried to go to another church, couldn't make it work, tried another one, couldn't make it work, tried to make his foundation fit with something else. And he finally just gave up. He says, I guess I'm just not meant to be a Christian, because he had never tore it down. He'd never fully deconstructed. And I met him, I guess it was 7 years ago, 8 years ago. I met him and we just started talking, and I found out mentally he had left, but mentally he was still trapped in it. And I started asking him like the basic questions about his faith system and what he believed and why did he believe it. And the root of the problem usually comes down to this: I believe it because that's what I was told to believe. And so I've accepted this, whatever this belief is, and I've built all this stuff on top of it. I can't just let it go. And my question was, well, if you don't let it go and it's not correct, how can you build anything on top of it and make it stand? And anyway, long story short, he is now very happily deconstructed, doing very well for himself and very active in his church. And not everybody has the same journey. You know, not everybody will make that same decision, but yeah. I feel like if you don't fully deconstruct, you've got this baggage that will always weigh you down. No matter whether you're Christian or whether you're atheist, that baggage will bog you down. Have you ever wondered how the Pentecostal movement started, or how the progression of modern Pentecostalism transitioned through the Latter Rain, Charismatic, and other fringe movements into the New Apostolic Reformation? You can learn this and more on William Branham Historical Research's website, william-branham.org. On the books page of the website, you can find the compiled research of John Collins, Charles Paisley, Stephen Montgomery, John McKinnon, and others, with links to the paper, audio, and digital versions of each book. You can also find resources and documentation on various people and topics related to those movements. If you want to contribute to the cause, you can support the podcast by clicking the contribute button at the top. And as always, be sure to like and subscribe to the audio or video version that you're listening to or watching. On behalf of William Branham Historical Research, we want to thank you for your support.
I think that trying to, without going all the way down, you end up going, like I kind of mentioned earlier, to something that feels a little comfortable and a little familiar. But you have to go all the way to the core, which is the scariest thing. I would say things to Renee when we were, because I was ahead of her in this whole process. And when I got down to the core, she would be like, you're scaring me. Because I would say something, I would just challenge different things. And I said, just listen to me. Don't judge me. I'm just talking. I'm not telling you what I think, but I'm telling you, I'm questioning this. You know what I mean? This doesn't make any sense to me. And then I look at, a lot of the things. Channel Ross, I think you were taught, you had, was he the one that was going out and working, ministering with the, with the homeless?
Yeah, I think he did. I know we mentioned it because one of the churches I attended, they work with the homeless in Jeffersonville and Louisville. So I think we had that conversation with Chino. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I loved it because he was kind of talking about, like all this effort and money that people would give. And like, he was like, he went and did something like you say, working out and physically went out and went and helped these people. And I was like, and that's kind of like, when I'm looking at this, after I went through all this and I scared my wife to death and I've kind of rebuilt some things back, now I'm kind of at the point where like, okay, I want to go out and do live this out. So I've started donating. Like, I'm not donating to the churches anymore because I feel like there's so many things out there that we can do and a change that we can affect with our finances, with our time, with just us as people, as being friends with folks. And it's like, when I look at this this thing, that it's like kind of the opposite of what we're seeing now with a lot of the Christian nationalism and just a lot of just things that are going on that make me scratch my head. It's like, I don't feel like we're being the hands and feet of Jesus Christ at all at times. I feel like we're not out there helping people, kind of like what we were talking about with Chino. And I just feel like there's so many other things that we could do as Christians and as people, followers of Christ, other than this thing that we've been taught, that, like, to your point, like just like dumbing down and just mindless robots, just giving millions and billions to these people who in turn, I don't even know what they're doing with it, and it's that's kind of where I'm moving towards this whole idea of like, hey, I'm going to start taking and not being ashamed to if someone asks me, I challenge them, as far as like what they're doing with their time, their effort, what's the church doing, right? It's because I think that these are tough things that once you deconstruct, I feel like the church itself needs to have some of this happen to it. Oh, and yeah. Get back to what are we here for? What are we doing? Like, do we really need to build a $90 million sanctuary? Or, Or, why are we doing this? Oh, yeah. Because I think that I don't know that many people want that answer, though. And I think that's one of the reasons why, if we don't stop and take a step back and vote with our feet by moving out with our wallets, then this none of this is going to change. I don't think, personally.
I don't think so either. As long as you give them their money that they're asking for, they're going to continue doing it, because why would they stop? When we tried one of the churches here that was really involved with the homeless ministries, homeless ministry, just because I use the word ministry, a lot of people who are in these cults, they mistakenly think that this is somebody who's going to the homeless and just preaching to them. But no, these are people who don't have food. They don't have shelter. And I sat down, I took the pastor out for lunch one day, and we were just talking about it, because my wife had became active. She was cooking for the homeless, and they're preparing meals, doing some things. And he said, John, this is really sad. And I'm not going to name the church. Somebody listening can decide for themselves. But they're the closest thing we have to a mega church in this area, with several campuses around. massive amounts of money are flowing through this thing. He said they would not donate a dime. And we're talking, these are people who don't have food to eat. That's how bad this is. And the mega church in the area won't give a dime to help them. And he said he approached them, he tried, and he said they shut him down. He said, our little church, in fact, I think the church actually kind of they imploded and had to merge because they did not have enough money to feed the poor and to sustain the building. So the mega church, with the millions of dollars flowing through it, won't give a dime. The little guy who can't hardly keep the lights on in his own church is the one who's helping the poor. That's how upside down this mess is.
Yeah. And that also underscores the fact that there are good places out there and you can find them if you look hard enough. But I think these mega churches, you think about Olsteen and Driscoll. I think Olsteen made $55 million just on books last year. Like Mark Driscoll, I mean, these guys are pulling in Judas Smith and Jennison Frank. I mean, these guys are pulling in billions of dollars. And I mean, you know, when you look at, I guarantee if you dug in to what they give back to the community, It's probably a small, well, you know, the 2-8% is probably generous in some for some of these folks, you know. And I think you mentioned it in one of your podcasts recently that just eliminating the tax exemption status for church, I'm all in. I think I've seen so much in just my little experience, just myself, you know, a couple churches ago, my wife, you know, she was on staff and she would see this same thing. I mean, we're bringing in a lot of money. It was a big place and a lot of people were turned away. I mean, we did help some people. I'm not saying we didn't, but I will tell you, there was a lot more we could have done, a lot more. And that's why for me personally, I'm going right to some of these organizations and sponsoring like a room for a homeless for a year or whatever. I just did that recently. Just wherever I can see, like, hey man, I want to give it right to the organization that's doing this locally, because I think that, again, I mean, to your point, I mean, this happens everywhere. I mean, these big churches, they just aren't, and. You know, you can imagine how much, I mean, like yourself, you know, I can't tell you how many thousands I've given over the years. I think about how much I could have helped people. I mean, it's, you know, and then I told my wife the other day, I'm like, you know, we all have friends or family that are suffering. If I give all this money to the church and then they do whatever, and I don't help my family or my kids, then what am I telling them? You know, I mean, to me, I think that's important that I show these people around me that the love that, you know, and help and then just to let them know, hey, I see you. I understand. If I am ever in need, I hope you help me. And I think it's starting like almost like grassroots, so to speak, you know. So yeah. That's kind of where, you know, I've kind of landed with all of that.
What's a good place to be? Helping people. Really, that's what this is all about. You should go to church. You should hear the gospel, yes. But hearing the gospel and letting somebody suffer because they don't have food, can you really call that Christianity? I personally can't. I think it's got a different mission. So let's talk a little bit about Jeffersonville. So you said your family was connected to Jeffersonville here, where the headquarters of Christ Gospel Church. What was it like for you when you come to Jeffersonville and saw the headquarters of the Christ Gospel?
Yeah, when I was young, we would come up for like July convention or March convention. And it was just like there was this, like we get to see, you know, Sister Hicks or, you know, whatever. And it was just like everyone was in awe and the services were wild. And I was little, right? And I mean, oh my goodness, man, hours and hours, right? And then as I, you know, grew up in that and as I got older, then I got involved with the youth conventions and stuff like that. And man, we were just so excited to come to the mothership or whatever we called it. I don't know, us kids had nicknames for it. But it was always, I guess when we were younger, it was a treat, so to speak, to be able to sit and listen to her. And I mean, I do remember, I will tell you that I couldn't understand anything. It was she would say all this weird stuff, and then she'd make those loud, you know, words. She would, you know, speaking in tongues or whatever. And I was like, it was wild, man. And you know, I will be honest, the older I got, it didn't help me understand it any better, if I'm honest. I was like, man, I was right. This is crazy, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's kind of the way, you know, it was always this thing of like, you always wanted, like, if we go to youth convention, she would be in the youth, it was a smaller, I went back, from my dad's funeral and I saw the building and I always thought it was this massive, the youth place, the center or whatever, it's tiny. And she would be in there and we would always be like, Sister X is going to be in there. Cause they, after the service, we'd go in there and eat snacks or whatever. And it was just basically, we were just worshiping her. You know what I mean? It was just, I mean, that's all it was.
She was the false deity.
Yeah. And it was, and so, I mean, you know, I lived in Evansville, and I will say my pastor I grew up with was an amazing human being. And I don't know if you've had a boss or a manager in life where he was really good at taking the garbage from up here and not letting it get to you. In protecting, you know, the folks he manages. That was my pastor in that I grew up with. He married myself and Renee and loved him to death. And I don't ever remember him teaching crazy stuff. I mean, we were in it. He was obviously taught the standards, but a lot of that stuff, I'm guessing he got in trouble because he didn't. I don't know. Just a guess. But he was really good at just being a good human and loving his the folks in his church, and I did appreciate him, and I was very thankful to have known him. And but other than that, man, it was a wild ride, you know. And we were only 2 hours away from Jeffersonville, so we were there a lot, you know. We were there every chance my mom could get. So
yeah, I think that's a good point to bring out, because the national media and all the documentaries that you see, whenever they investigate a cult, whatever cult it is, cult A, B, C, D, when they investigate cult A, and then suddenly somebody realizes that, wait, cult A, they've got a church in our town. They're just like this in this documentary. But what you see in the documentary, they're showing you the worst of the worst of the worst, right? I, too, had some really good leaders that I came in contact with in the message cult. They were off base. They did not understand the Bible. You know, I give them a little bit of leeway just because I was in the same boat as they were, right? But they were truly, truly good people. And as far as cultish, some of the men that I knew, they were not at all. They, in fact, they would frown to think that they would even be considered to be a cult. But then there were those others. They longed for the power. They were hungry for the power. And money, power, sex. I don't know if there was power, if there was money and sex in some of them. I guess there were in a few that I knew, but most of the cases that they just wanted the power. They liked the respect that they got from it, and they fed on that.
And I feel like that in these organizations, like I say, the money, sex, and power, it's like it could be one, it could be all, but power is, I think power is in all of them. I think that's the initial draw of it, is they do something and they, oh man, like, you know, like did you see their reaction? And that, and then that, and it just feeds that, and it feeds it, and it from there it grows into whatever, you know. We've seen it. I mean, because, you know, like my pastor, you know, it's funny, you, to your point, not all of them were crazy like that when you just look at a documentary, but I will tell you, I've been in plenty of them that were, that should have been in the documentary, missed them. It would have been great if they would have discovered them. But, you know, but some of them were just, oh my goodness. And I was so thankful that wasn't, Renee got more of that than I did, more of the crazy. And, you know, and I felt like growing up, I was very thankful looking back that for my pastor that I had, because he shielded us from a lot of that stuff.
Yeah.
But he was a good guy, you know. But yeah, but no, it's it was interesting. And we when I grew up and went to college, one of my best friends that brought me to Missouri, he introduced me to another couple of guys, brothers, and their dad was the pastor in Missouri, and they were a great family as well. Very kind, brought us in and treat us like family. And as all good cults do, they split, you know, and the that great family went one way, the other family knew with the other, and I had both of them call me, which way are you going to go? I'm like, I don't know, you know, and it was horrible. But yeah, we've had some good ones along the way. I mean, if you're going to be in a cult, I mean, you know, we had some good cults, you know.
Yeah, what you said made me really, I feel really sympathetic for the people in the Civil War. Once you've been through a cult and you understand how it grows and splits and all of this, and then you see both sides of the split, and they're both good people, right? It makes you really sympathetic for what happened during the Civil War. But yeah, I shared some good experiences. I had some, usually they were away from Jeffersonville. When I came back to Mecca, that's where all the crazies were kind of concentrated. So you saw some weird things. We used to have every Easter, there used to be this big, I think it was a box truck, but the guy had painted Joseph as Lord. Joseph is William Branham's son, so he would be the son of the cult central figure. He would write Joseph is Lord, and he would park it right there by my grandfather's church, shut the keys off, and lock the door. So everybody walking in the building, and it's hard, you know. I look at it, and that was nuts, but I feel sorry for the guy because he's trapped in this religion that spawns off this hero worship. And the first time I saw it, when I moved back here and I'm seeing all the crazy stuff, I thought, man, this is really weird. That guy's off his rocker. And nobody's going to think that the sun is God, right? And lo and behold, I'm here for, it was oblivious to me for about a year. But after a year, I suddenly started to realize that in the church, there were these three categories of people. You had those that worshiped the cult leader, William Branham, who's dead, those who worship his son, who's still alive, and those who thought both sides were nuts.
God, it's like Stranger Than Fiction, man. It's unbelievable.
Stranger it's Things, unbelievable. The religious version.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But I went back home, and, you know, we went for my, Renee shared the story of me going in and meeting with them prior to my dad's funeral. And the strange, like just the feeling you get when you walk in there, it's just so oppressive, and it's just bizarre. And you just look at this and like, man, like you know, how do these people still do this? Like you know, you're like it's 2024 or 25, you know. It's like I mean, have you guys not just Google? I mean, just for, you know, just for the heck of it, Google something, say any of this. And I think, I don't know, it's just so bizarre. Like I say, Stranger Things, the religious version. Definitely. Definitely, man.
Well, and the sad thing is, so I've also had to come to terms with this. I had to come to terms with deconstruction. That's hard. We talked about it before. That's the most difficult thing you'll ever do. Well, I also had to come to terms with the fact that some people will go down that journey so far and see how hard it is, and then purposefully go right back in. And I've seen it a few times after leaving. I've worked with people who came out. They knew every single thing. They were asking me questions, telling me things I didn't know that was false, right? And then they went so far and realized, wait a minute, the moment I do this, I'm going to lose every friend I had. I'm going to lose all of my family. Some people were employed by people who were a part of the cult, so they're going to lose their job, may lose their house. I mean, they literally will lose everything. And some people say, I just can't do this. In fact, I had one person blatantly tell me, he said, I'm sorry, I know it's wrong, but I'm not going to lose everything for doing this, and I'll just go and be happy in the cult. Okay, that's your journey. It's not mine, but that's your journey.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I won't say who it is. It's I don't know. It's you see some of these people that they'll go and but they'll still maybe dress the same, or you're just like, what? They can't get this out of them. And I think some people are afraid. You know what I mean? They're just like when we left, the one pastor who's not even in it anymore, he's like, you're going to miss the prize. I'm like, dude, what prize are you talking about, man? Was I going to get something? Like, you know, money come back? Is it gold? Is it worth anything? Is it all the money I gave you? Yeah. You know? And I'm like, dude, what are you talking about? But some people will get told you're going to miss the prize, and then they'll fret and worry and like, oh man, maybe he's right, you know. And I just think it's, and you know, and they might get away for a brief moment, and like you say, they go right back in it, yeah. You know. And they just it's wild. It's wild.
The fear is a big thing. I have seen countless women who they leave, they start wearing the pants, like you said, they start wearing normal clothes, and then they'll tell me, John, I'm going back to my mother's house and I've got to put on a dress so that I don't offend her. She's requiring me to wear a dress in her house. And I'm like, well, do you require her to wear pants when she comes over to your house? Because it works both ways, yeah. Right? If you're gonna set the boundaries in this house, you can also set it in the other house. But there's that fear, right? And the fear, I joked with the person, but honestly, I'm sad for the situation, because the fear isn't what most people would think in all of this thing. The fear is that what little thread of relationship that they have, that thread will be severed if the person enters the house wearing the different clothes. And that tells you the power and the destruction of a cult, because it's stronger than the bond between a mother and a daughter. That's how bad this is.
Yeah, it really is. And I, you know, I don't remember what Renee said, but both of our parents are, well, my mom is still in it. Her parents are still, they don't go, they physically can't, but And most of her family still claim to be, you know, part of it. Again, most of them are elderly and just can't physically go. But it's sad. And I think a lot of it is that they've put so much into this, and it's fear. It's the anxiety of starting over, you know, and they just don't want to know. I mean, it's like, and maybe they do know. Maybe they feel like that all their chips are in, and they just have to ride it out and hope that they're right. And I just it's just sad. It breaks my heart. It really does. You know,
it is sad. If you could give some advice to somebody who is about to take their journey and going down the pathway of deconstructing, what advice would you give them?
I think that when you first go into it, I didn't know this, but you learn it quickly. It's hard, number one, super, super hard. So saying that, you have to have the fortitude and the strength to not get mad at yourself, to not worry about being embarrassed about, oh my goodness, I spent my whole life, whatever. You can't think about any of that. You're gonna experience it, but you can't let it stop you. And you can't be afraid to think about things in ways you've never thought about them before that might scare you and make you think that, you know, you're going against God or whatever. He's okay. You have to get okay. And you have to go through these things, and you have to just have the fortitude and the strength and the courage to go all the way through. You can't go part of the way. You can't go three quarters of the way. You got to go all the way through. And I really feel that if you do, I feel like you'll be surprised once you get through on the other side. I feel like the air is clearer. You know, you can breathe easier. You can see more clearly. And I will tell you, you can't unsee what you see on the other side. You can't unsee it. And then once you do that all the way, you won't go back. I believe with all my heart. I once you see the, you know, what's on the other side of this, and I think you have to do that, because if you don't, you won't last long.
Yeah.
You know, you may not even start. You know, you might think you're going to start, and you just say, you know, it's too hard.
It's very good advice, and I will add to that, because I'm an emotional person, and this, whenever you're going through something that difficult, if you're an emotional person, you'll struggle with your emotions and things, your thoughts will come out emotionally. And sometimes it may come out in anger. Sometimes it may come out in humor, which is out of place. I was doing this all over the place. And as I was deconstructing, there were times that I remember making my wife so angry because I'm just so mad. It came out as though I'm so mad at things I shouldn't be. But that's not the way it was. That's not me. It was just me trying to break through this. So I learned very carefully, and after a few meltdowns in the family, some things you have to process before you express them verbally. That's my piece of advice.
And you know what, John, you hit the nail on the head there. It's like going through the stages of grief.
Oh yeah.
And that anger is part of it. I mean, it really is. I mean, I'm getting better. Because I see some of the stuff now, especially like with some of the things that the church is doing, and I still get super angry. I'm like, why? Why would they say that? Why would they treat those people like that? Why would they treat those people like that? Like, but I have to understand that those people aren't there yet. Obviously haven't deconstructed. And so, but to your point, it's like it's okay. You're gonna go through those things. You know, just learn how to not take it out on somebody else.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
Like your spouse, you know,
it's unhealthy.
Yeah, it is. And know you're going to scare people that aren't where you're at. That's the other thing I have to. You know, I've said it before, but
yeah.
But it's worth it. It's so worth it, man. I feel like the relationship with God is everything's different because. You're kind of seeing him for who he is to you. Now, I don't mean you get to make it up, but I mean by reading and thinking on your own and not being told how to look at it, you know, and think about it. And that's part of the reason why we're not going anywhere right now is because while I'm doing this, I don't want to get caught up in that thing of, well, we get friends with this person or the pastor or whatever, and all of a sudden now I'm letting myself work through this so no one can take it from me. And you know what I mean? Because those guys are good. Some of them are really talented.
Yeah.
You know, like convincing you to follow them, you know.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Well, this has been a fun conversation. Thank you so much for coming here and sharing your thoughts.
Yeah. No, I appreciate it. I appreciate everything you do. You're doing an amazing thing. And we've turned a lot of people on to you. And I just hope that I know it's a lot of work, man. I get it. But I mean, I just appreciate you doing this.
Well, thank you. Hopefully it helps some people who are listening. Yeah. So, well, thanks for doing this and tell your wife I said hello, and hopefully I'm getting some more people from Christ Gospel Church that'll share their story. There's so much more that people are wanting to hear. I just got an email 2 days ago, and they're wanting to hear more about the inner workings of Christ Gospel. So hopefully some listeners will share their story.
Yeah. So. There's so many things that being as we were always in, like, part of the inner workings, anywhere we went, you know, we would always volunteer. We'd always on the board at places. And there were so many things that, you know, and I kind of wanted to take a little bit different path here just to kind of share, just to encourage people to go down this path. But as far as Christ Gospel, there are so many things that would just blow your mind. Well, I wouldn't blow your mind because you've seen it too. But to the listeners, just the nuts and bolts and the things they did with the witness and the things that happen behind the scenes, that some of which I probably wouldn't say because it's you know, you, I don't know, I'm assuming someone listening might, you know, come after you or whatever, because, like, you know, I don't want to say illegal or whatever, but there's some stuff that was just crazy. Yeah. And Scott did a really good job of talking about the teachings and things that I remember. But the inner workings, like, if there was someone that would come in and just the structure of it and how they did things and not just what they taught, but it's wild how they moved people around and how they treated families how they, like my wife's dad and John, it was something, man. And now all of it was to bring money in to the, you know, the offerings to she would take up at conventions and raise six figures to remodel a mansion. And then all the 100 guys that were in this big auditorium that would volunteer to come do it. There was just a lot. I mean, if I started thinking about it, it's just, yeah, you should talk to other people, because everybody's going to come at it from a different angle and remember something different. And I enjoy listening to it too, because I'm like, oh my God, I forgot about that. That was crazy. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't believe I was there.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, thank you so much for doing this. Hopefully somebody does listen to this and they'll come share their story. And if you have enjoyed the show and you want to share your story, you can check us out on the web and you can contact us there on the contact page at william-branham.org. For more about the dark side of the New Apostolic Reformation, you can read Weaponized Religion, From Christian Identity to the NAR, available on Amazon, Kindle, and Audible.